Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Democrats increased their margin in the U.S. Senate in Tuesday's election, despite predictions that Republicans might capture control of the chamber. Republicans did manage to keep their big majority in the U.S. House, prompting more fears of partisan gridlock for the next 2 years. Thanks to redistricting maps drawn by the 2011 General Assembly, Republicans won 9 of North Carolina's 13 congressional races. Currently, Democrats hold 7 of the seats. Here to talk about what all that means for Congress and for North Carolina is one of the Democratic members of the state's congressional delegation who survived on Tuesday, Congressman David Price. Well, Congressman Price, thank you very much for being with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Glad to be with you.
Well, let's first get your initial reactions to the news of this past Tuesday. What were you thinking when you were watching these results come in late at night and early in the morning?
Well, I was hopeful. The signs were good, but there were enough close races around the country, including the president's race, to make me and others very, very nervous. I was gratified by my own victory in the 4th District, but troubled by the defeat of or the resignation of some other members whose districts were made much worse by virtue of the way my district was drawn. I know very well what the Republicans were up to when they drew those districts. Very happy the president pulled through and did so well in North Carolina. Worried about what's going to happen here in Raleigh with unchecked Republican control. So it was a very mixed night, but a lot of causes for satisfaction, including the holding of the U.S. Senate, which a year ago people would have said was totally impossible.
Yeah, what do you account for, if you had to point to one or two things, for the president's, I don't know if it was overwhelming, but certainly significant win in the Electoral College and the Democrats actually gaining seats in the U.S. Senate when the Republicans thought they actually had a chance to retake it?
I think the president successfully focused on the contrasting paths going forward. The election, of course, inevitably is something of a referendum on the past number of years, but it needs also to be a choice going forward, and I think the president framed that very well. I also think that in terms of the referendum aspect, there have been signs of slow, steady progress, not fast enough, but still some real hope that the economy is improving and people are feeling that. That's not just unrelieved gloom. These are bad numbers, but we had a bad recession, and so there's a sign of movement there, a sense of movement and progress. And then finally, I think you have to ask yourself whose fingerprints were on the economic difficulties. Historically, usually that's been the president. But the Republicans, by capturing the House in 2010 and by pursuing one thing after another, it was a shutdown, it was defaulting on the nation's debt, it was a very high-profile and very noisy campaign of brinksmanship and trying to block the president, actually stall the recovery. That put their fingerprints, I think, on the economic problems and meant that it wasn't going to be just Obama taking the fall. On the contrary, people had the sense that the Republicans had not cooperated, had not done what they should do.
How do you account for the fact that Republicans not only held the House, but the Democrats didn't make some of the gains that folks thought they were going to make?
Have to look at that seat by seat. I mean, in North Carolina, we know very well what happened. A map was drawn designed to take a evenly divided state and produce a congressional delegation of 10 Republicans and 3 Democrats. So that tells you right there that's going to be a very distorted map, and indeed it is. Looks like Mike McIntyre is going to pull it out in the 7th District, which is a good thing. But there's no question our delegation has shifted. We will probably be 9 Republicans and 4 Democrats, and that reflects what we think still is an illegal map, and the courts will still have their say on that. That's not the whole story, though. Nationwide, there was a kind of status quo outcome, I'd say. A lot of Republican members had their seats made safer by redistricting, but it was a pickup maybe of, looks like it's going to be 7 to 9 Democratic seats nationally, which of course is welcome, but not enough to do the job. We needed 25 to take control. House seats tend to be discrete districts. They're not necessarily subject to national trends. And then I think the role of money is going to be very significant here as we analyze these races. I know just anecdotally in race after race after race where our guys were doing well, boom, in would come hundreds of thousands of dollars of super PAC money, unaccounted for. Just nipping in the bud, hopeful Democratic races. I would imagine the money disparity is extreme, and that it will account for a lot of these races that went, from our point of view, went the wrong way.
Taking all that, the election results, the president's win, the gains by the Democrats in the House and the Senate, although the Congress is still divided, what sort of momentum or thoughts do you think that brings to the pressing debates in Washington, specifically the fiscal showdown that looms?
Well, that's the question of the hour, I think. And I don't know the answer to it, frankly. We will see, and we may not see until the spring, because in this lame duck session, we may just defer the fiscal cliff, so-called. That is, the meat axe sequester cuts, the fallback cuts that are the result of the failure to reach agreement on the budget, and then the reversion of a lot of the tax cuts from the Bush years, plus a lot of other tax provisions. So all that together is aptly referred to as the fiscal cliff. I don't think it'll necessarily be dealt with in the next few weeks. But you ask yourself, and I'm just looking at the commentary after the election, what lesson have the Republicans learned, and how are they going to handle this? And that really is the key question. I don't think there's ever been a question that the president, the Democrats, were ready to work as we did in the 90s, work on a balanced, comprehensive package that included revenues, but it also included all kinds of spending cuts. The Republicans have consistently simply refused to deal. They all signed this Grover Norquist pledge. As long as you leave half the ledger off the table, then you're not going to solve this, and so far they haven't. Now, the commentary this morning, a lot of Republicans saying we weren't conservative enough and we've got to double down. But fortunately, that's not the only view in that party. The more realistic view, and I think the more constructive view from the standpoint of what you're talking about, is that this fever's got to break. You know, we've reelected a Democratic president. Democrats have actually gained seats in the Senate, picked up seats in the House. The American people have really repudiated the politics of shutdown and brinksmanship. That didn't go over very well. The American people have elected a president who's talking about a more positive path forward, and so we do need to find a way to get this together, and that means a comprehensive fiscal plan. I think the Simpson-Bowles is at least an outline of what this might look like. And I very much think that's going to need to be done early in the new year. Whether the Republicans are missing in action and we go to the brink again and again, that really is mainly up to them. It's how they read their future as a party and how they read what the American people expect of them.
And do you think the American people understand what's at stake with even just the sequestration cuts that are looming, I guess, over North Carolina?
Well, there's been a lot of commentary on it, especially on the defense cuts and how damaging they would be. And, of course, it's not just the amount of the cuts. It's also the indiscriminate character of the cuts. Sequestration is designed to be unacceptable. It was designed as a fallback to force the parties to reach agreement on the budget. As you recall, a year ago, the super committee, so-called, and the fact the super committee, even in the face of this, didn't agree just tells you how deep the polarization is. So there's been talk about the defense cuts, but the domestic cuts, in my opinion, are even worse, even more damaging. That's mainly because they come on top of domestic cuts that have already been done to stop the earlier showdowns, the earlier threats of collapse. So there's a lot of talk about it, a lot of punditry about it, but probably it hasn't sunk in, no. And that's partly because nobody can quite believe that we'd be reckless enough to let this happen on January 1.
Well, Congressman Price, we really appreciate what you're doing in Washington, and we appreciate you being with us this morning.
Thank you. It's great to talk to you, Chris.
Up next, a look at elections in North Carolina and what happens now for Democrats in the state. Stay with us.